page 404, section 2, The War Comes to Georgia. As you read, look for the battles in Georgia during the war, Georgia's Civil War prison at Andersonville, the end of the war, terms, platform, racism. The defeats of the weekend of July 4th, 1863, were disheartening for many Confederates. As the death rate of soldiers rose due to battle and to disease in the army camps, many Georgians became unhappy with the war. In 1862, the Confederate government had begun drafting soldiers into the army. The wealthy could afford to pay people to go as their substitutes, but middle-class farmers could not. By 1863, more disillusioned Georgians began to desert their military post. Soldiers were not the only Georgians who were war-weary. By that time, the economic problems, including inflation and shortages of goods, also hurt morale on the home front. During the first 2 years of the war, the battles had been fought in the West and in the Upper South, especially Virginia. With the exception of the taking of Fort Pulaski, the blockade of Savannah and Georgia's coast, and the raids on the Western and Atlantic Railroad, the military aspect of the war had not come to Georgia. In late 1863, however, the fighting did come to North Georgia. Although the Confederates were able to push the Union back into Tennessee for the winter of 1863 to 1864, the Union Army returned in 1864. Union General William Tecumseh Sherman brought the war into Georgia that summer with his campaign to take first Atlanta, then Savannah. Savannah became Sherman's winter headquarters in 1864 to 1865 before he headed into the Carolinas in February 1865. The areas along Sherman's path were in ruins when the war finally ended in the spring of 1865. Page 405, Chickamauga. While Grant had been working to take Vicksburg, Union General William Rosecrans had begun moving toward Middle Tennessee on June 24, 1863. Opposing him was Confederate General Braxton Bragg, who retreated all the way to Chattanooga. Rosecrans' success had come without the bloodshed of Gettysburg. The fighting got ever closer to Georgia. Lincoln had wanted Rosecrans to attack Chattanooga immediately, but Rosecrans waited until mid-August. Bragg expected to be attacked from the north, but the Union troops split into three groups and maneuvered south. Although Bragg got reinforcements from Virginia, in early September he decided to leave Chattanooga so he would not be trapped there, surrounded by the river and mountains. Bragg took his forces into North Georgia. The Union troops followed. Confederate President Jefferson Davis ordered Bragg to attack Rosecrans and sent help. Confederate reinforcements under General Joseph Johnston arrived from Mississippi, and Georgian James Longstreet headed through the Carolinas and Georgia to join them. The first of Longstreet's forces got there on September 18th. The real battle began on September 18th near Chickamauga Creek. The fighting was heavy on September 19th, but Union lines held. On September 20th, Rosecrans believed there was a hole in his line and moved forces to fill it. That created a real gap. Confederate troops under General James Longstreet attacked, driving Union forces back to Chattanooga. The Battle of Chickamauga lasted 3 days. Because Bragg forced the Union out of Georgia, he was considered the victor. But the losses on both sides were horrifying. 16,000 Union soldiers and almost 20,000 Confederate men were killed, wounded, and missing. These were the second highest losses of the war after Gettysburg. Bragg's officers wanted to immediately follow the retreating Union troops and destroy the army, but Bragg refused. Instead, he decided to lay siege to Chattanooga. By early October, Union reinforcements arrived outside Chattanooga. In October, Lincoln had decided to put General Grant in charge, and he arrived on October 23rd. A few days later, Union troops were able to open one supply route into Chattanooga to get food to the hungry troops inside the city. Then in November, reinforcements under Union General William Tecumseh Sherman arrived. On November 24th and 25th, Union troops drove the Confederates first from Missionary Ridge, southeast of Chattanooga, and then back into Georgia. Both armies settled in as winter came. The Campaign for Atlanta. As the troops wintered in Tennessee in 1863 to 1864, President Lincoln decided to place General Grant in command of all the Union armies. Grant believed in new strategies, including the idea of continuous offense, even when the loss of life might be great. He thought it would end the war faster. He believed that the South had to give up the will to fight. Union General George Meade received orders to advance on Confederate General Robert E. Lee in Virginia, and Grant chose General William Sherman to command the invasion of Georgia. Sherman had been stationed in Georgia in the 1840s, serving at the U.S. Arsenal in Augusta, so he had some knowledge of the state. His first objective would be Atlanta. During the first 2 years of the war, most battles had been short, some only a day, with long periods between fighting. In the spring and summer of 1864, that changed. Battles lasted longer, with sometimes very few days to rest in between. Another change in the strategy in 1864 was that the war was taken to the civilian population. Soldiers destroyed Southerners' property as they marched through an area, and they seized livestock and food from the fields. Rather than relying on supplies being brought to them from behind, the Union soldiers lived off the land and farms. For several months in 1864, Georgia felt this total warfare. When Sherman began his campaign for Atlanta, he had 98,000 troops to face the 65,000 troops of Confederate General Joseph E. Johnston, who replaced Bragg after the Chattanooga disaster. As Sherman marched through North Georgia toward Atlanta, Johnston was repeatedly forced to retreat from his defensive positions as Sherman's men swung around behind him. When the two armies met in a conventional battle on June 27th at Kennesaw Mountain, Sherman's troops had five times the number of casualties as Johnston's. Johnston's defensive tactics led Confederate President Jefferson Davis to replace him with General John B. Hood. Sherman continued to fight toward Atlanta, and by late July, he was on the outskirts. Sherman, however, could not take the city from its defenders, who were led by General Hood. Hood had tried to go on the offense against Sherman's troops. However, from July 20th to 22nd, the Confederates had close to 15,000 casualties in engagements. Hood went back on defense. The war was becoming unpopular in the North, and many thought President Lincoln might lose the election in the fall of 1864. The Democratic Party of the North was running against him on a platform of opposing emancipation and trying to make peace with the South. A platform is a statement of the principles and policies that a political party supports. Georgia's Alexander Stephens was still the vice president of the Confederacy. He hoped that a Democratic victory against Lincoln might bring a ceasefire, truce, and perhaps even an end to the war, with the South recognized as an independent country. Stephens and others knew that if Atlanta could hold out, at least past the election, a new president might come into power in the North. Hood's and Sherman's armies fought the rest of July and August. Finally, Sherman pulled his troops from the trenches north of the city and sent them around the outskirts of Atlanta to destroy the railroads and cut Atlanta off from the rest of the South. Rather than have his army taken, General Hood withdrew his troops from the city. As he left, Hood burned military supplies that he did not want Sherman to get. On September 2nd, Sherman moved into Atlanta. Hood at first went to northern Georgia, hoping to cut off the supplies Sherman and his men were getting from Tennessee. He was unsuccessful and had to retreat to Alabama. Sherman sent a telegram to Lincoln, "Atlanta is ours." Thanks in part to Sherman, Lincoln won re-election in the North. Page 409, Sherman's March to the Sea. General Hood took his army through northern Alabama and then into Tennessee, hoping that Sherman would follow him. Sherman, however, was determined to march through Georgia from Atlanta to the Atlantic Ocean. His march to the sea was aimed at making war so terrible that Georgia would want to end it. He wanted Georgia's citizens, old and young, rich and poor, to feel the hard hand of war. He also intended for his troops to live off the land as they traveled, so they would not have to worry about getting supplies from the Union. Sherman wanted to bring the war to an end, and he believed that taking the war through Georgia would make that happen faster. His troops left a burning Atlanta in mid-November and spread out over the countryside. They destroyed railroads and bridges, ate food from Georgia's fields, and burned up the cotton crop. At times, the troops were spread out from 40 to 60 miles wide. In the Georgia state capital of Milledgeville, the Union soldiers held a mock, pretend session of the legislature and repealed Georgia's ordinance of secession. Cornelia Jones Pond described a visit of one Union division to her father's plantation in Liberty County. After rummaging through the home, searching for valuables, they raided the livestock. The next morning, when the family went to the back porch, they found no sign of life anywhere. The hen houses had been emptied of all the poultry. The smokehouse and storeroom doors and dairy were wide open and robbed of everything. The hog pens were empty, and not a fowl, goose, turkey, or duck to be seen anywhere. The troops had left corn, peas, and rice, so the family at least had some food. As Union troops marched the 300 miles to the sea, African Americans left the plantations and followed them. For them, Sherman's march meant freedom. However, they often encountered racism from the northern troops. Racism is abusive or discriminatory behavior toward members of another race. Many northerners thought slavery was wrong, but they did not believe in the equality of blacks and whites. In spite of that, many African Americans, including Georgians, fought with the Union Army. Sherman's troops reached Savannah on December 21, 1864. The telegram he sent to Lincoln said, "I beg to present you as a Christmas gift the city of Savannah." In Savannah, Sherman also found 25,000 bales of cotton, which he sent north. Sherman wintered in Savannah, headquartered at the Green Meldrum House. In February, Sherman's army left for South Carolina, the state where both secession and the war had begun. While most of Georgia's capital, Milledgeville, had been spared destruction, much of Columbia was burned down. These actions in Georgia and South Carolina accomplished what Sherman had hoped. More and more Southerners were ready for peace. The desertion rate from the Confederate Army soared. Towns filled up with women and children, refugees from their ruined farms and plantations. Andersonville Prison. By 1864, the main Confederate prisoner of war camp for captured Union soldiers in Richmond had become overcrowded. The Confederate government decided to build a new prison camp deeper within the Confederacy. The site chosen was in Macon County, in southwest Georgia, near the railroad depot of Andersonville. The new prison covered 16 acres and was meant to house around 10,000 men. A small creek ran through the site and furnished water. The prison opened in February 1864. In March, Captain Henry Wirz took over command. Unfortunately, Andersonville quickly became overcrowded. By August 1864, it held more than 30,000 Union prisoners. This overcrowding led to major problems. The creek became polluted with sewage and garbage, contaminating the drinking water. This caused disease to sweep through the prison population. Food and other necessary items were difficult to get in a Confederacy dealing with shortages, so prisoners became malnourished. Even the guards had few food rations, but at least they could leave the prison to search for extra food. Heat and insects plagued the prisoners during the summer. Under these horrible conditions, gangs emerged within the prison. The guards had great difficulty keeping them under control. In July, prisoners themselves executed 6 gang members and established a prisoner police force to try to keep some order. As Sherman and his men marched into Georgia's interior, many of the prisoners were moved. When some of the prisoners arrived at a quickly built camp in Savannah, the citizens of that city were shocked to see their bad condition. Some Savannans even threw bread to them. By early October, Camp Lawton near Millen opened. During the time of Andersonville's operation, almost 30% of those sent there died. Captain Wirz was blamed for many of the problems, although some have argued there was little he could do. After the war, Wirz was charged with excessive cruelty. The war's end. The last action in Georgia came when Union General James Wilson, with 13,000 men, came into Georgia from Alabama. Georgia General Howell Cobb and his 3,000 militiamen offered only weak opposition. Columbus fell on April 16th and Macon on April 20th. Governor Joseph Brown, Confederate Vice President Alexander Stevens, and General Howell Cobb were among the Georgians arrested by the Union troops. Robert Toombs managed to escape to Europe. Meanwhile, in Virginia, Union General Grant laid siege to Petersburg and Richmond. In April, Lee was forced to abandon their defense. He headed south toward North Carolina. Unlike some of Lee's earlier opponents, Grant did not stand by and watch as Lee retreated. He ordered his 80,000 troops to pursue Lee's army, which was now down to around 35,000 men. Lee, seeing that further fighting would cost more lives without any victory, surrendered on April 9, 1865, at Appomattox Courthouse, Virginia. Grant was gracious after the surrender, allowing Lee's men to leave for home to plant crops. On April 26, Confederate General Joseph Johnston surrendered to Sherman in North Carolina. By late May, all the other Confederate generals had surrendered. The Confederacy simply disappeared. Confederate President Jefferson Davis had fled from Richmond after Lee's retreat. He wanted to keep on fighting, but the majority of Southerners were ready for the war to be over. Davis was captured by Union troops in Georgia. Unfortunately, as tired, ragged, and hungry Confederate troops came home, many stole food and other items along the way, continuing the chaos that the war had brought. Both sides had paid dearly in the war. Over 260,000 Confederate soldiers and 360,000 Union soldiers were dead. Thousands of others were wounded. Many were left crippled or blind. The South, where most of the actual military action had taken place, was physically devastated. Railroads had been pulled up, factories burned, and crops destroyed. The Southern economy was in shambles. Reactions to the war's end were varied. Many Confederate soldiers and their supporters on the home front were depressed by their defeat. White women often expressed relief that the war was finally behind them. Cornelia Jones Pond said in her memoirs, "Though regretting our defeat, I rejoiced that the war was over and that my husband was safe at home." Gertrude Clanton Thomas of Augusta wrote in her diary on May 1, 1865, "The war is over, and I am glad of it. It is humiliating, very indeed, to be a conquered people. But the sky is so bright, the air so pure, the aspect of nature so lovely, that I can but be encouraged and hope for something which will benefit us." For black men and women, the end of the war meant freedom. When the announcement was made in Augusta, Northern missionary William Russell said of the scene that a great cry from every mouth and evidently from every heart came from the slaves gathered at the commons. All Georgians, black and white, now faced an uncertain future. They would have to create a new society. Reviewing the section. 1. Define platform racism. 2. What were the two major campaigns fought in Georgia in 1864? 3. Why did General Sherman attack the civilian infrastructure between Atlanta and Savannah? Page 413, Discovering Georgia, General Sherman and the Green Meldrum House. Even though Savannah residents had lived with Union soldiers at nearby Fort Pulaski since its capture in 1862, they had believed that they were relatively safe. As General Sherman left Atlanta on his march in the fall of 1864, many thought he would go somewhere else. However, as he neared the coast, it became clear that Savannah was his target. Since his soldiers were living off the land as they marched, they needed the supplies that could be delivered to them by Navy vessels at the port of Savannah. On December 13th, Fort McAllister fell, and both Union and Confederate troops realized that Savannah would soon be in Sherman's hands. The approach to Savannah through the marshes, swamps, and rice fields was not easy. But General Hardee, in charge of Savannah's defense, knew it was a matter of time. In the end, the Confederates retreated across the Savannah River along with many citizens. Mayor Richard Arnold and several other leaders rode out of Savannah to find a Union officer to surrender to. Soon, Union troops filled the city just in time for Christmas. This was not Sherman's first visit to Savannah. He had been in the city in the 1840s as a young soldier. He originally intended to stay at the Pulaski House, a hotel. Charles Green, a British gentleman, was a successful cotton merchant and shipper. Hoping to save his home and his cotton, Green offered his beautiful Gothic-style home to Sherman. Sherman wrote to his wife, "I am at this moment in an elegant chamber of the house of a gentleman named Green. The house is elegant and splendidly furnished with pictures and statuary." Sherman said, "A most excellent house it was in all respects." It was from the Green House that Sherman sent his telegram to President Lincoln, giving him Savannah and 25,000 bales of cotton as a Christmas gift. The house served as Sherman's headquarters until February 1865, when Union troops moved on, eventually heading into South Carolina. Charles Green lived in his house until his death. His son later sold the house to Peter Meldrum, a judge. In the 1940s, the St. John's Episcopal Church bought the home to use as a parish hall. Today, the Green Meldrum House is a National Historic Landmark popular with tourists to Savannah. Page 414, Chapter Review, Chapter Summary. Section 1, Georgia Goes to War. In early 1861, 7 seceded states met in Montgomery, Alabama, and formed the Confederate States of America. Alexander Stephens of Georgia was chosen as the Confederacy's vice president. Robert Toombs became the Secretary of State. The Civil War began in April 1862 when Confederate troops fired on and captured Fort Sumter in Charleston Harbor. One Union strategy was to blockade southern ports, including Georgia's, to prevent supplies getting in or out. The blockade severely damaged the South's economy. In the early years of the war, most of the fighting was in the Upper South. On September 17, 1862, the deadliest battle of the war to date took place at Antietam in Maryland. In September 1862, President Lincoln issued the Emancipation Proclamation, which freed the slaves in the areas still in rebellion. In early July 1863, General Lee took his forces into Pennsylvania, where he was defeated at Gettysburg. From that point on, the battles were fought on Southern soil. Section 2, The War Comes to Georgia. In September 1863, the first major battle in Georgia took place at Chickamauga Creek, south of Chattanooga. Confederate troops forced Union troops back into Tennessee in the bloodiest fighting since Gettysburg. Union General Grant assigned General William Tecumseh Sherman the task of taking Atlanta. Confederate General John B. Hood was unable to stop Sherman, who took control of Atlanta on September 2, 1864. In November 1864, Sherman began his March to the Sea. Along the way to Savannah, Sherman's troops destroyed railroads and bridges, stripped food from Georgia's fields, and burned up the cotton crop. The devastation extended 40 to 60 miles wide. Sherman arrived in Savannah in December 1864. An infamous Confederate prisoner of war camp was located at Andersonville, Georgia. During the time it was open, over 13,000 Union soldiers died there. Confederate General Robert E. Lee surrendered to Union General Ulysses S. Grant on April 9, 1865. Over 62,000 Union and Confederate troops died in the war. Many thousands more were wounded. Pages 414 and 415 contain a review of Chapter 16.